This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, a Malaysian filmmaker currently based in Chicago. Jean Ho has been working on directing and producing an animated docuseries called Invisible People, which highlights Malaysia's stateless and refugee communities. Set to be released sometime in May this year, the documentary explores why citizenship should be a fundamental right rather than a government-mandated privilege, and why stateless and refugee communities deserve access to basic rights like education, affordable health care, and a stable income, as us Malaysians do. Today on the show, I find out more about this animated documentary series, and I'm also going to ask Jean how she hopes that this film will enact both big and small changes through the stories showcased through the film. Welcome, Jean. How are you today?
I am doing good. How about you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining me today. So yes, the timing's a bit off, but yes, you know, thank you for joining us at this strange hour all the way from Chicago. I really appreciate you speaking to us. So let's just get straight to it, Jean. What was it about the topic of statelessness and refugee communities in Malaysia that inspired you, you know, to actually create this documentary series, Invisible People?
Yeah, so Invisible People actually started out as a grant application for this film festival called Freedom Film Fest, which is a pretty big documentary festival in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. I applied for it at first in April of 2020, so that was right in the middle of like lockdown and MCOs and everything like that, and I was still in Malaysia at the time. So I wrote it because I was kind of like, it's kind of one of those things where like I stumbled on some article that was written years ago about like, you know, stateless people in Malaysia and what the implications are for like not having citizenship. Mm. And, you know, the same goes for refugees in Malaysia as well. And I was like, oh, you know, this sounds like an interesting topic I would like to explore and see if I could do something in lockdown when everyone's like really not doing anything at home. So I applied for it. I didn't get the grant. But I continued with the project anyway. I mean, no problem. That was like years ago. But I didn't get the grant, but I went ahead with the project anyway because I felt like it was definitely something that stood out to me as like, you know, a lot of people, like thousands of people in Malaysia are just suffering from this every day. And, you know, it just didn't sit right, you know, to find out that at the time there wasn't much mainstream media coverage on it. You know, so I kind of set out to, you know, be able to spotlight that as much as I could as an independent filmmaker and see how far that would go. So that's how it kind of started. So, yeah, I would say no specific reason, but, you know, an old article, and then, you know, that kind of blossomed into the way the project is now. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And it's interesting because the timing as well, I mean, you were here, so you would have seen, of course, you know, that rise in xenophobia during the pandemic, isn't it, towards undocumented people here in Malaysia. There was this sudden call to, yeah, they were treated very badly during the pandemic time. So yes, it's interesting that, you know, it all kind of aligned in that sense. Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, you know, the kind of issues they face, right? So can you tell us more, you know, based on your research about some of the legal and societal barriers that actually contribute to state listeners in Malaysia? Take it away.
Yeah, for sure. I'll probably start with the factors as to why statelessness is such a huge thing in Malaysia. Mm. One of the reasons, actually, in terms of babies being born in Malaysia itself, if they are born to, let's say, a Malaysian father but a non-Malaysian mother, and both the parents are estranged, that child would not get Malaysian citizenship because the authorities assume that the child would follow the citizenship of the mother. Which obviously, if they are estranged, you know, there's no way to communicate that, especially if the baby is with the father. So that's one way the baby can be stateless.
Yeah.
And children being born out of wedlock also often suffer the same thing. And, you know, kids also being abandoned when they're young and not able to find a biological link to their parents also contribute to that. In terms of babies being born overseas, like what I said, if, you know, it's kind of like the Malaysian father gets a short end of the stick in Malaysia, but outside of Malaysia, it's the Malaysian mother that gets that short end of the stick. Because yeah. If a Malaysian mother marries a non-Malaysian father and they have kids together overseas, the child, it is assumed then that the child would follow the father's citizenship rather than the mother's citizenship. And, you know, oftentimes a lot of people, unfortunately, do not know that that is a thing, and they have families outside Malaysia assuming that the child will be able to, you know, apply and get Malaysian citizenship, but, you know, that turns out to not be the case, and that's how a lot of these children also end up stateless. So yeah, those are a couple of the factors that contribute to statelessness in and out of Malaysia.
Yeah.
And, you know, the consequences of that can be very brutal, especially in terms of, you know, having the lack of affordable health care you know, not being able to access that same rates that we Malaysian citizens get when we go to, let's say, a government hospital. You know, like they're not able to get the same things. You know, vaccinations are going to be more expensive. Doctors checkups are going to be more expensive. And especially during COVID as well, when people wanted to track who came in and out of the hospital to, you know, basically contact tracing, you know, a lot of stateless people did not have proper documentation that resulted in a lot of fear of going to the hospital, because that way they were afraid that they were getting caught because they didn't have an IC, or they didn't have, you know, or they only had a birth certificate, or maybe none of those even. And, you know, that could be a really big problem with the authorities when they find out, you know. So that prevented actually a lot of stateless people from seeking proper care during COVID. And in terms of, well, that's for healthcare. In addition to healthcare, they also don't necessarily get access to public education the same way that Malaysian citizens do. Technically, there is a rule saying that if one of the parents of the child is Malaysian, they can technically qualify to get into, you know, a public school, Sekolah Kebangsaan, you know. But the catch with that is that obviously everything's going to be more expensive for them, like, you know, higher fees, you know, higher, you know, getting school supplies on top of all of that. It's just all going to be more expensive because, you know, they, again, they are stateless, you know, they have no proper IC. And that's probably like the main part of them not being, you know, not being able to continue the schooling for that long. And then, you know, aside from education as well, you know, the lack of employment opportunities, because employers are obviously very scared to hire someone without an IC or without, you know, documentation. And even, and again, COVID really kind of brought out the worst in that, because, you know, these stateless people get stopped at police roadblocks, you know, trying to go to work. And when the police found out that they didn't have an IC, they would often call the employers and ask them, why are you employing this undocumented person? Like, what's going on? So a lot of stateless people were also being laid off from those factors. And yeah, I think in summary, COVID just really brought out like a lot of these problems that the country has been facing for decades at this point. And I think it's just, I'm just really happy that, you know, groups like Family Frontiers, which are also featured in this documentary, and places like Development of Human Resources for Rural Areas Malaysia, who are also part of this documentary, I'm just really happy that, you know, all this coverage is getting out right now with the help of all these bigger NGOs.
Yeah, so plenty of legal and societal barriers, right? And and of course, all of these also just heighten their risk and their vulnerabilities, right? Stateless individuals, right? So like you mentioned, like access to healthcare, education, employment opportunities, and that lack of recognition also just exacerbates the difficulties faced by the communities, right? And that's, I guess, what you wanted to highlight as well in your documentary?
Oh, yeah, 100%, for sure.
Okay. All right. And then, so in your documentary series, right, I mean, and again, you know, if there's no sort of like one stateless person story, you know, there's so many different stories and different experiences, right? So in your series, how did you go about trying to capture that diversity of experiences among stateless individuals? And how did you try to highlight the unique challenges that they are facing?
Yeah, for sure. And I think at this point, especially with, again, the rising media coverage around this topic, a lot of people at this point know that stateless and refugee communities aren't necessarily a monolith, as in, you know, different people can experience different things, even though they're part of the same community. And I also like to point out that this documentary was never intended at first to be animated. It was meant to be very traditional, like filmed in person with the people who that we were talking to, you know, getting paired that up with, like, you know, talking head interviews, like basically the traditional documentary. It was set out to be that way. But unfortunately, because of all the MCO policies that kept changing month after month and all like the different lockdowns, and, you know, me and my other friend Li Wei, she's not in this interview right now, but we started this project together, and, you know, we just had a hard time finding crew for that because, you know, we were all living in different areas, and, you know, if we didn't have proper clearance to go shoot something, you know, they're probably like, you know, they probably won't let us through. So we kind of had to take a step back, and, you know, and we ended up doing a lot of these interviews over Zoom with the people who we already connected with. And to be honest, for I think about a year and a half, because we filmed most of these in like 2020 to 2021. And then I came back to Chicago once the once like MCO was lifted a little bit. And, you know, that whole time, like, I just struggled to put together like a feature length documentary out of these like Zoom interviews. It just was just really hard to put a story together because everyone had such different stories and so many different experiences with the way they dealt with their citizenship issues. And it was just kind of hard to put a nice cohesive story and say, oh, this is it. You know, this is the stateless experience, but this is the refugee experience, you know?
Mm.
So I think in the end, I don't know how well-known this Netflix documentary is, but it is a short documentary called A Love Song for Latasha, where there was a 30-second sequence, actually, a 30-second animated sequence that was accompanied with the narrations of what happened in that documentary. And I found it, like, super inspiring because I was like, hey, I could probably do the same with my Zoom interview. So I was hugely, honestly, inspired by that documentary, like, you know, mm-hmm. overlaying the Zoom narrations with, like, you know, animated sequences, like, nice. You know, to be able to depict that in a much more interesting way instead of looking at a bunch of Zoom screens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still in college at the time, and I pretty much, you know, just scoured the area of my film school for, you know, animators, and that's how we have the team we have today. And it sort of happened naturally because all these animators were skilled in very specific areas of animation. So some of them were skilled in, like, traditional 2D sketching, and some of them were skilled in psychedelic animation, even some were skilled in, like, mixed media and combining 2D and 3D mediums. And we just kind of ran with it. We're like, hey, you know, if everyone has a different style, I think that could be reflective of the different experiences that all these participants we were talking to had. So that's how it came about eventually, where, you know, we were like, okay, you know, this participant probably best fits the 2D sketch, or this participant best fits, like, the mixed media, you know, mm-hmm. style.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of linked that up with the way, you know, with the personalities of our participants, with the way the animators drew them. So, you know, see what best fits them visually. So yeah, that's kind of how that format came about. And I'm really happy with the way it's gone since the Zoom recordings we initially did.
Okay. All right. Just hold that thought, Jean. When we come back, I will find out more about, you know, the six different individuals and allies that were featured in the documentary series and how it has actually come to fruition. I'm speaking today to Jean Ho. She's a filmmaker. Her animated docu-series called Invisible People highlights Malaysia's stateless and refugee communities. It's set to be released sometime in May this year. We're finding out more about it on the show today. We'll have more after one quick break. Keep it here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. On the line with me today, all the way from Chicago, is Jean Ho. She's a Malaysian filmmaker, well, currently based in Chicago, as I mentioned. She's been working on directing and producing an animated docu-series called Invisible People, which highlights Malaysia's stateless and refugee communities. And it's set to be released sometime in May this year, so we're finding out all about it. So Jean, yes, you know, before the break, you shared why you went into animation, right, instead of, like, a traditional kind of documentary series. And you also spoke about, you know, the significance of using different animators for each episode, right? The style just kind of gelled, I suppose, right? And I do understand that, you know, there are six episodes, yeah? And featuring six different individuals and allies in the documentary series, right? You want to tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So the current animated docu-series consists of six episodes, with each episode lasting from about 6 to 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So each one just pretty much spotlights one very specific participant or ally to the cause, and that's how the general series is structured. So the first episode covers Adra and her son Rashan. So Adra is a Malaysian mother, but her son Rashan was born in Sri Lanka to a non-Malaysian father, and that obviously made him stateless because, you know, he's born to a Malaysian mother.
Yeah.
The family have actually applied at the time of the interview in about 2021. She was in the middle of applying for her son's citizenship, which started all the way back in 2017 when they returned to Malaysia from Sri Lanka. And at the time, she was just super duper frustrated with, like, you know, the lack of transparency in the process, and, you know, why, you know, she hasn't heard back from anyone regarding the case. And that was her, I guess that was that point in her life when we connected with her and did the interview. So pretty much the entire interview, she was just speaking up about the cause and, you know, being like, hey, this gender discrimination shouldn't exist anymore. It's the 21st century, you know, like, you know, what are we still doing with regulating what gender gets automatic citizenship and what gender doesn't, you know? So that was her whole mindset. And that's what the first episode kind of centers on. And there, I can't spoil it too much, but, you know, her son does go through a lot of personal things as well as a kid. And at the time when we interviewed him, he was only like 5, 6,
oh,
I think. And he was already going through, like, various, like, mental health conditions. Again, I don't want to spoil the episode too much, but he was going through, like, a bunch of mental health breakdowns that, you know, when a kid his age shouldn't have to face, you know, and it was just all because of this whole statelessness issue.
Okay.
So that was the first episode. The second episode features Dr. Tamara, who is a senior lecturer at Taylor's University. And her area of research is statelessness as well. And you know, this one's a little bit more informational, I would say, just because, you know, she herself isn't stateless. She's more so like an ally to the cause and doing active research on stateless communities. So that one's a little bit more, you know, informational, sort of like it gives the audience a more detailed breakdown about, you know, why these systemic barriers exist in the first place, especially for stateless and refugee people. And in the case of refugee people, I realize I have not touched on that yet, but in the case of refugees in Malaysia, the reason why they're not entitled to very basic asylum protections is because Malaysia is not a signatory to the United Nations 1951 Refugee Convention, which is sort of like the blueprint for countries granting asylum rights to these refugees. But because Malaysia is not a signatory to that, it means they are not legally bound to those obligations and therefore can pretty much do whatever they want with refugees, unfortunately. And that's the whole reason why refugees in Malaysia also suffer so much, you know, and gaining back so little from the system. So she kind of goes through all that for both stateless and refugee people and, you know, just kind of compare and contrast the differences between these communities. And again, I also have to put that out that while some communities like the Rohingya can be stateless and refugees, a lot of the times these two communities don't really overlap. They're like kind of like their own thing as well, and therefore those comes with different experiences as well. So that's the second episode. The third episode features a man named Peter, who's a Chin refugee from Myanmar, and he runs a nonprofit school in Kuala Lumpur dedicated to, you know, pretty much the education of child refugees who, you know, can't afford public school or just like are not qualified to go to public school in the first place. And he's just using the help of countless volunteer teachers to help facilitate the education, especially with learning English, because and this is his personal experience as well, where, you know, he's had students, you know, go on to again resettle in places like the US because, you know, they learn English from him or they happen to be really fluent in English. And I, you know, that's a big point for him to make sure they're educated on a lot of international topics. And I really appreciate that the work that he's doing pretty much. And that's what episode three goes into. Well, episode four features the director of social protection for the development of human resources in rural areas, which was the NGO I mentioned earlier, who's doing a lot of work for stateless people. Her name is Miss Malini Romolo, which I don't know if you've had her on
Yes, we
BFM because
have. Yes,
she's
we
everywhere, but
have. Yes, we have. Yes.
yeah, she does a lot of good work. And again, this is less of a personal story and more so of an informational perspective again, because she herself is Malaysian who just happens to do a lot of work with the stateless community. So yeah, that also kind of goes through just the process of, you know, stateless people like not being able to access like, you know, simple things like affordable health care, education, and, you know, like a right to legal employment. So it's just very specific to stateless cases. And then episode five features Shi Yokling, who's a lawyer and committee member of Family Frontiers, again, which the NGO I mentioned earlier as well.
Yeah, she's a regular on the show, so yes, go.
Oh
I'm very
yeah, for sure.
familiar with
I
her
feel
work.
like Malini and Yokling, they're everywhere. So
Yes.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people know them by now. They're really public figures. But yeah, no, this at the time of the interview here again, that was kind of like right after that lawsuit happened with the six Malaysian mothers against the government. And that you know, where they won the lawsuit, but then it was recently like at the time was recently appealed, where the government attempted to appeal and say, you know, hey, let's just take back this lawsuit, you know, and not have them, you know, not have the amendment go through. So that was at the time where we, you know, started interviewing her. And Yokling herself, you probably know she's a mom of a stateless child as well.
Yep, definitely.
And she pretty much collaborated and did a lot of work with Family Frontiers and helping them, you know, win the lawsuit, making sure that the amendments stay tabled and things like that. So episode five really goes into, I wouldn't say just that case specifically, but both that case and also what Family Frontiers does as a whole. And, you know, everything from how it was founded to, you know, the work that they do beyond that lawsuit. So just kind of brings more attention to that specific NGO and all the good work they do for stateless people. And also, fun fact, I don't know if she ever brought this up, and she didn't bring this up with me, but I found it online when I was researching her before our interview. But I don't know if you ever watched the animated series Captain Planet.
Oh,
like a
yes.
Really, really old
yes,
animated
yes.
series.
We did bring it up, but yes, please tell our listeners.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. yeah, no, but yeah, according to, like, you know, the Captain Planet co-creator and executive producer, Barbara Pyle, Yokling was the inspiration for Gi, who was the bear of the Wandering. So I thought that was a really cool fact.
It is. It blew my mind because I used to watch that cartoon as a child. I was like, no way. It was so exciting.
Yeah, no, for sure. That was really, really exciting for a lot of people who grew up with the series. But yeah, that's episode 5. And our final episode, episode 6, focuses on Rohana Abdullah, which she actually did go viral back in 2022 because of her situation. So she's a child of a Malaysian father who unfortunately abandoned her when she was born. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her mother's not Malaysian. So it was a whole thing where the media kind of made it out to be that, you know, her mom abandoned her and she was raised by, you know, Chi Hoi Lan, or who she calls Lao Shi, you know, like teacher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's this whole narrative that she was abandoned as a kid, and then, you know, this kindergarten teacher stepped up and raised her, you know. Mm-hmm. But she told me during the interview, and it's included in the final episode as well, that her mom didn't actually abandon her. In fact, she's living with both. At least before she went to university, she was living with both Chi and also her mom, mm-hmm. Who happens to be Indonesian. But really, the abandonment just came from, like, you know, having to go back to Indonesia for a few months to renew her documents before coming back, you know, because she wasn't a permanent citizen, like, sorry, a permanent resident. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a whole narrative that they kind of, like, blew it up and, you know, made it seem like she was abandoned forever, but really she's not, you know, like, she has a mom, and she also has Chi who raised her. But that's also not to downplay Chi's efforts, because obviously, like, despite the cultural and religious differences, I think, you know, Chi really made it a point to, you know, again, raise her the way her mother intended to raise her, especially mm-hmm. when she was gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought that was just a really touching story in general. And yeah, that episode 6 kind of just goes through that entire story and what she hoped for her future, and also just dispel some of the myths that the media kind of made it out to be, but it really wasn't, you know, like, it's a mix of all of those. So that's episode 6. I hope I didn't take too much time.
No, not at all. No. No, because this is interesting, right? So it's very, again, you know, it's not a monolith, right? So very diverse stories and covering, again, not just statelessness, but also the refugee situation, those who are, you know, refugees living here in Malaysia, you know, not recognized, isn't it? And so many issues based on that. I guess, you know, based on the 6 sort of, like, topics that you've kind of curated, right? What kind of impact do you hope it will have on raising awareness and also driving positive change for both the stateless and refugee communities in Malaysia, and but also beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, really, the initial intention, this is still the current intention of the documentary, is just to sort of, like, again, spread even more awareness about these situations to just the general Malaysian public. So I think, especially with local films these days, like, you know, Abang Ading and stuff like that, I think most of the public has at least some awareness of what's going on, you know, with stateless and refugee people. But, you know, this is also to just dive into the very, very specific experiences of real life people and not just kind of go like, oh, you know, this is the stateless experience or this is the refugee experience from, like, you know, what most bigger media makes it out to be. You know, it's a lot more nuanced, a lot more different than that. And it varies from individual to individual. And I think this documentary really is more so of an individual approach, you know, to these experiences rather than just saying that, oh, this is what it is, you know, and that's it. So it's just meant to create, I would say, a lot more empathy for the actual people who are going through this, at least to the viewer. And, you know, again, that's the main goal, is just to spread awareness. And also, you know, this is wishful thinking, but it could happen, you know, just to inspire maybe some policy change as well with the higher ups, you know, if they happen to ever see this documentary when it's out. Mm-hmm. I would also make it a point to say that I know the government is getting ready to table the amendment saying that children born to Malaysian mothers overseas are, you know, now allowed to get citizenship automatically. I know that amendment's being tabled and confirmed right now. But in addition to that, they're also bringing in a bunch of so-called not so progressive amendments, unfortunately. And some of those include, you know, being like abandoned children or children born out of wedlock or children born to permanent residents in Malaysia are now no longer entitled to automatic citizenship, which means they all have to register now instead of, like, you know, being able to just get citizenship from the moment they're born. And the fact that they have to register now means that they will run into the second issue that the government is also trying to table, which is they're reducing the citizenship application limit from 21 to 18. So not only does that give people, like, a smaller time frame to actually apply for citizenship, you know, that would also mean that in case they're, you know, in case the situation or case gets rejected and they have to appeal, you know, and, you know, appeals normally take a lot of time for the average person, that appeal might not even go through because, you know, they probably turn 18 by the time they try to appeal. And that obviously means that they can't apply for citizenship anymore. So that would leave even more people stateless, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And another thing as well, they're also trying to table sort of like the revocation of citizenship granted to foreign wives who marry Malaysian fathers or husbands in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. If their marriage dissolves after 2 years. So that means if they happen to be estranged after within the 2 year time span, the wife no longer gets access to Malaysian citizenship. So that also raises the question of, like, you know, how these wives are going to handle, you know, being able to leave potentially abusive, you know, relationships.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's also going to, you know, prevent those wives from trying to do what's best for them and their family. So that's unfortunately all, like, sort of like, again, the not so progressive amendments that you're also trying to table together with the good amendment of actually letting overseas born children be granted citizenship regardless of gender. So, you know, it's a balance of the scale right now that I think a lot of people are hoping that, you know, would not have to come to that, you know, where we trade one thing for the other. I would say also, I just hope this documentary contributes to the conversation in a very positive and nuanced way, you know, as to help people understand why. You know, regardless of, like, the administration that's in charge, or regardless of, like, you know, the categorization, that, you know, citizenship should be a human right, you know, rather than, like, some sort of government mandated privilege. I think that's the most important message we're trying to bring here. So, yeah.
Okay. And no, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's ridiculous that, you know, these other things need to come in just to give one right to, you know, such a hard fought right for Malaysian mothers. And then, you know, go and couple it with all of these other things that are happening is really quite, it's really quite insidious, like, really terrible. For you personally, right, Jean, you know, when you were making this film, so, I mean, again, you know, you met so many different people, you spoke to so many different people. Anything that really changed you, you know, any personal stories or anecdotes from your interactions with, you know, refugees, asylum seekers, or the people who are working with them during the production of Invisible People that, you know, really, really impacted you?
Yeah, for sure. I think the one I can come off the top of my head is that was when I was talking to Peter, that Chin refugee who runs that school. You know, and I think a lot of us grew up with this narrative that, you know, refugees are overstaying their welcome here, or, like, they're here to make trouble, or they, you know, they contribute to crime rates and stuff like that, which, you know, after talking to him, that's absolutely not true, because, in fact, a lot of these refugees, they aren't, like, you know, that lazy stereotype that's often attributed to them. Like, a lot of them actually want to learn, you know, they want to upskill themselves and actually want to, you know, learn, whether that's a new language like English, or, you know, just learning math, science, the basic subjects in general to, like, help them get further in life. A lot of them actually want to contribute to the country, and they're pretty much willing to do it any way they can, because obviously, like, if you're living in a country that's, you know, not, that's essentially kind of, I would say, sort of protecting you from whatever's going on in your country of origin, like, I'm pretty sure you're sort of naturally inclined to try to give back. But unfortunately, all these barriers kind of make it almost impossible for them to do so. And that's why they're stuck in this, like, limbo situation where, you know, there's nothing much that they can do. And then that kind of leads to that xenophobia stereotype of, oh, they're just here to, like, overstay their welcome and not do anything, which that's not true at all. You know, like, a lot of these students that I met with Peter, they want to learn, you know, whatever they can. So I just hope that stereotype just gets diminished entirely. Like, I know it's decreasing as the years go by, but I just ideally would want it just, like, again, to vanish, like, you know, sort of, like, immediately, because that's not a very good stereotype. And I would say, at least for stateless people, I would say sort of the same thing, where a lot of them are also in a place to contribute to the economy, which, again, it's a whole thing with the Malaysian brain drain and everything, where they're desperately trying to find new labor to replace that. Mm-hmm. And again, stateless people are in the place to contribute to that. It's just, again, the barriers that they face constantly every single day are not allowing them to do so, to reach the full potential. So I would say that's also a thing that I've talked to them, is that they want to help, you know, they want to contribute. It's just, they're just waiting for the opportunity for that would give them, you know, the chance to do so.
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably the most memorable experience I took back.
And you know, they're also not here looking for charity. They want to contribute. They want to work. They're just not given the opportunity to, isn't it? So they're just caught in this awful limbo and then regarded so badly by Malaysians. So it's really, you know, it's just unfortunate all around. And they're coming here, you know, they're leaving their homes for a reason, right? I'm speaking about the refugees, of course. They didn't choose to come here for fun, right? It's because of like facing death and persecution. So really, we really need to give them a break and to, there definitely needs to be a lot of policy changes. Jean, the films are set to be released, what, sometime in May, you were thinking about? I mean, what's actually happening with the docuseries itself?
Yeah, for sure. So we are really pushing for a May release date as of now. Mm-hmm. But because obviously the animators work at different rates, you know, and a lot of them are still going to college. There's a whole thing of like, sort of like, you know, being put out at like very different rates, depending on how fast the animator can work. Right now, actually, I'm proud to say that the first episode is like completed. It's done. Like we're in the middle of submitting it to film festivals right now. And, you know, it's the screening link is still technically private just because we're submitting it to different festivals and different festivals have requirements on like, you know, whether you should premiere the documentary or not before they select you. So, you know, we're still trying to figure out, you know, keeping it private, but also public knowledge that, you know, a lot of the work is also done already, you know, so it all really depends. So, you know, I would say May is our projected release date in terms of being able to circulate all episodes within the film festival circuit. But we also have plans beyond that to, you know, maybe be able to stream a, like an educational platform for people to see, you know, for free and just open to the public, you know, whether it's through YouTube or, you know, like just community streaming services, which I feel like in the States, they have a lot more of that, like very city specific streaming services or state specific streaming services, you know, as compared to Malaysia. So. You know, like a place like, you know, Netflix and all that, that'll be cool and all. But I think our real target would be those smaller platforms, like whether it's like, you know, Tubi or this Chicago-based streaming platform like OTV, like, you know, those kinds of platforms are really where we're trying to target and hopefully where those episodes will be available. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, but of course, you know, you guys have a website and folks can kind of keep updated with what you're doing there. Am I correct?
Do you want me to plug the website?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, and that's just, well, it's just invisiblepeople.com, isn't it, for folks if they'd like to keep updated with you guys. Do you also have social media platforms?
Yeah, for sure. So our, again, our website link is invisiblepeople.com. Actually, we do have a link tree on our website that immediately kind of takes you to all our social media. Mm-hmm. But if you want to search us up yourself. We're available on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook right now. And they're all called Invisible People, Invisible People Doc. So the handle for all of those platforms is Invisible People Doc.
Okay. All right. And any help that would be, you know, useful to the work that you're currently doing, you know, anything that you hope Malaysians can actually do? Are you looking for collaborators or, yeah, anything at all that might be helpful for the release of the documentary series?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in terms of like a general public level, if you want to share this episode, like, you know, on your own platforms, be like, hey, you know, like I listened to this really cool episode about this really cool animated docuseries, you could feel free to share that and tag us again at Invisible People Doc on any platform you're on. Mm-hmm. But also if there are any, like, you know, any more press people or like just even entertainment distributors that happen to listen to this or producers even who happen to listen to this episode, feel free to hit us up, you know, on our website. We have like a contact page for people to send general inquiries to. I think that'll be really helpful in helping, you know, get that project onto, again, a public platform that's beyond the private film festival circuit. That would really help us well if any film folks are listening to this podcast. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Jean, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. And we hope to see, I look forward to seeing all six episodes when it's fully released. Before I let you go, any concluding message perhaps that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Really, like, I think the only message I have right now is just have empathy. Like, I know it sounds really simple, but, you know, again, having basic empathy and, again, just willing to listen to these stories and, you know, not dismiss them as, you know, some sort of stereotype or whatever preconceived notion you had in your head before you talked to that person. Just, you know, let's not do that. You know, let's let go of that. Just be empathetic and be open, you know, and, you know, it might seem like you might not be able to do much to help on a small scale. But, you know, again, every action you take, whether it's just being open to listen to that individual's stories and empathy, empathizing with them, or, you know, being able to help make a small donation or volunteer your time to these NGOs, I think it would really mean a lot to stateless and refugee communities. So yeah, just be empathetic.
Okay. Jean, thank you so much for joining me today. I was speaking to Jean Ho, a filmmaker, a Malaysian filmmaker currently based in Chicago, and the animated docuseries that she's been working on directing and producing called Invisible People is set to be released in May. So if you'd like, again, if you'd like to keep updated, just head to their website, and that's invisiblepeopledoc.com, and you can follow the link tree there as well. All the updates are there. But if you miss any part of our conversation today, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn. You can also find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.